Dead eyes follow Pip Fitzsimobi everywhere now. Once a brilliant teenage detective who solved two major cases, she's barely holding herself together. The trauma of her previous investigations has left her dependent on illegally purchased Xanax just to sleep. Her relationship with Ravi Singh provides moments of normalcy, but even his warmth can't keep the darkness at bay. Strange incidents begin accumulating. Dead pigeons on her driveway, one grotesquely decapitated, chalk figures drawn progressively closer to her house, and anonymous messages asking, "Who will look for you when you're the one who disappears?" When "Dead Girl Walking" appears written in chalk on her running route, Pip can no longer deny it. Someone is stalking her. Despite meticulously documenting these incidents, Detective Inspector Hawkins dismisses her concerns, suggesting neighborhood cats might be responsible. His attitude only strengthens Pip's conviction that these aren't random occurrences. What initially seems like a new mystery becomes deeply personal when she discovers an article about the DT killer, a serial murderer whose methods match exactly what she's experiencing. Headless pigeons, chalk figures, silent calls. Even more disturbing, the killer's final victim was murdered the same night Andy Bell disappeared, the case that started Pip's investigative journey. The links between Pip's stalker and the DT killer strengthen when she meets Maria Karas, mother of convicted murderer Billy Karas. Maria claims her son's confession was coerced, noting the evidence was merely circumstantial. Billy found one victim's body, knew another victim, his work van was spotted near a crime scene, and he had access to the duct tape used in the killings. All connections lead to Billy's employer, Green Scene Limited, a landscaping company owned by Jason Bell, father of Andy Bell from Pip's first case. This connection forces Pip to question everything she believed. When interviewing Harriet Hunter, sister of the fourth victim, Pip learns that before her sister's murder, two headless pigeons appeared at their home, and chalk figures were drawn near their driveway, matching Pip's current experiences. Shockingly, Harriet reveals Andy Bell contacted her after Julia's murder. In Andy's secret email account, Pip finds a disturbing draft indicating Andy knew the killer's identity, someone close to her family who sat at their dinner table. Pip answers a call from Jason Bell's number, then feels arms grab her from behind, a hand over her mouth, an arm around her neck. She wakes bound with duct tape in a car trunk. Jason takes her to Green Scene Limited, revealing it as his killing ground. He disables security systems, ensuring no witnesses until Monday. Alone in darkness, Pip recognizes the DT killer's pattern, leaving victims alone before returning to kill them. Summoning her determination, Pip escapes her restraints, topples the shelving unit she was tied to, and finds a hammer. When Jason returns unexpectedly, she fights for her life and kills him in self-defense. Though shocked, Pip thinks clearly enough to call Ravi. Together, they formulate a plan to cover up Jason's murder by framing Max Hastings, the man who raped Kara Ward and escaped justice in Pip's previous case. Pip and Ravi execute an elaborate scheme to frame Max for Jason's murder. They enlist friends to establish alibis while staging evidence. After drugging Max with Rohypnol, they steal his clothing items to plant at the scene. They position Jason's body in the woods, transfer Max's hairs to the corpse, create his shoe prints in the mud, and make bloody footprints leading away. They burn Jason's car and the storeroom, drive Max's car past traffic cameras, then return his belongings while he remains unconscious. Their perfect plan unravels when Pip learns her headphones were found at the murder scene. They'd fallen out when Jason grabbed her, creating a direct link between her and the crime. Despite her carefully constructed alibi, this evidence threatens everything. Faced with this devastating development, Pip decides to confess, taking full responsibility to protect everyone who helped her. She'll claim she killed Jason before Ravi's alibi began, manipulated the body temperature, and acted alone without her friend's knowledge. Before surrendering, Pip documents evidence linking Jason Bell to the DT killings, identifying his trophies, a gold coin necklace from Dawn and rose gold earrings from Becca. Meeting with D.I. Hawkins, Pip discovers police have already started connecting Jason to the murders. Reports reveal he wasn't just the DT killer, but had operated as the Southeast Stalker, a serial rapist throughout the early 1990s who stopped around Andy's birth in 1994. His pattern shifted when Andy turned 15, suggesting his daughter's maturation triggered his evolution from stalker to killer. Billy Carras is released as charges against him are dropped. Meanwhile, Max is arrested for Jason's murder with damning evidence: his bloodstained hoodie in his garage, matching shoe prints, and his DNA on Jason's body. Yet D.I. Hawkins' behavior during their final interaction suggests he hasn't fully accepted Pip's account. His parting words, "I'll come find you when I'm done," hang between promise and threat.
Realizing she can never truly rest while suspicion hangs over her, Pip makes an agonizing decision. She must cut herself off from everyone she loves to protect them, especially Ravi. If Max is found not guilty, the investigation will turn to her, and she can't risk Ravi being charged as an accessory. In a heart-wrenching scene in Lodge Wood, Pip tells Ravi they can never see each other again. Despite his desperate protests and suggestion they could marry for spousal privilege, Pip walks away to protect him. 72 days into her self-imposed exile in Cambridge, Pip counts each day while distancing herself from family, planning to remain at university over Christmas. In her lonely purgatory, she promises herself to be a better sister to Josh, appreciate her parents more, prioritize friends, and tell Becca the truth about Andy and their father. Most of all, she thinks of Ravi constantly, speaking to an imagined version of him when scared or lonely. This story explores trauma's devastating consequences and justice's moral ambiguity. Pip was already unraveling from ethical contradictions in previous cases, dependent on prescription drugs, haunted by nightmares, and questioning her moral compass. When confronting Jason Bell, a murderer of multiple women, she initially saw redemption. Yet covering up his death and framing Max only deepened her moral entanglement. The novel asks, can vigilante justice be justified when legal systems fail? What psychological toll comes from taking justice into one's own hands? Violence creates far-reaching ripples. Bell's crimes generated generational trauma, while Pip's act of self-defense endangered everyone in her circle. Each helper became both protector and accomplice. Yet light persists. Ravi's unwavering love serves as an emotional anchor, even after learning the truth. Pip's final self-sacrifice shows maturity as she recognizes how her presence could taint their futures. Haven't we all wondered what lines we might cross to protect loved ones when systems fail? Pip's journey suggests sometimes the bravest choice isn't fighting, but walking away to shield others.